3, 2, 1.
It's an Arsenal Thing podcast. Football's in our DNA.
And welcome to It's an Arsenal Thing. I'm your host, Tom, and with me as per usual is a man who enjoys nothing more than a casual drink. That means t-shirt and jeans. Who once ate 16 pickled eggs in one sitting and no one wanted to sit next to him. And who dabbled with changing his name under the influence of drink to Toby Meccano. Sounds quite good. It can only be Mr. Silent Dave Hutchinson. On the menu tonight, we cover the clash against the gravel-voiced Goblin of the North, Jarndyce, and his Everton side. Manchester City are under investigation, not for their dodgy hoodies and training tops, although that should be a factor. They're horrible. It appears there's been 100 financial irregularities over a 9-year period under the ownership of Sheikh Mawad. They obviously aren't as adept as the chavs at covering the paper trail. Want to buy a watch, TV off the back of a van with a 50-year guarantee? Points deduction, hefty fine or expulsion from the Premier League are just some of the punishments available. What does it mean for us, if anything? I'll be dissecting that and the performances and the goal. Yes, two matches, 180 plus minutes of football and it's not even our goal. Was it fair to slam Jorginho on his first match in an Arsenal shirt? We'll be going over all that in the gunroom with the Pocketeers, Jay, Lauren, Tom and Nick from the Arsenal Bros podcast. We bring you up to speed with the WSL encounter between West Ham and Arsenal. Don't be too gloomy, Podders. 5 points clear still, at the top, at the summit. A game in hand, plus City were beaten by those without silverware. Now, it's our first podcast back after the transfer window closed. How do you think it went? We have emails by the bundle. We'll get to those. On the subject, we didn't get Casido, but during the bidding battle with Chelsea, did you know that Todd Bowley or Toddy Longpockets offered two nights with his wife, 120 million, and an all-expenses-paid holiday to Bognor Regis.
What else is there?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. We give you a list of football folk that have animal names. But first, to the archives. Charlie George missed 5 months of the 1970-71 double-winning season, having broken his ankle during the opening day fixture at Everton. After returning to action in January 1971, he played a significant part in Arsenal's late-season run-in. 19 years ago, Jose Antonio Reyes signed for Arsenal. What a player. 2004 to 2007, 69 appearances, 16 goals. Much missed.
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know who you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
Now then, a supercomputer has predicted the final positions in the Premier League from 8 to 1 in reverse order, like Miss World, isn't it really? From 8, it's Brighton and Hove Albion. That's not a bad season, is it? 7, Chelsea. 320 million to get 7th. 6, it's that lot. 5, Liverpool. In your dreams. 4, Newcastle. Well, I suppose so. 3, Manchester United. Let's hope not. 2, Manchester City, and of course at number 1 at the pinnacle, it's Arsenal. Prior to the match, Everton were winless in 8 Premier League games, drawn 2, lost 6, last having a longer run without a win between August and October 1994, which was 12. They've lost each of their last 4 home games. Only once before have they ever suffered more consecutive defeats at home, and that's 7 between April and September 1958. God, that's years ago. Arsenal's last 3 Premier League away games have seen them win 2-0 at Wolves, 4-2 at Brighton and 2-0 at that lot. The Gunners haven't won 4 consecutive away league games by at least 2 goals since October 1953. Crumbs! Everton have won just 3 of their 44 Premier League games against sides starting the day at the top of the table. Drew 9 and lost 32. 2-1 against Arsenal, October 2002. 1-0 against Chelsea in February 2010. And 1-0 against Manchester City in 2012, in the April of 2012. The most common result of matches between Everton and Arsenal when Everton is playing at home is 1-1. Five matches have ended with this result. The most common result between Everton and Arsenal is 0-2. Nine matches have ended with this result. During the last 30 meetings with Everton playing at home, Everton have won 9 times. There have been 8 draws, while Arsenal have won 13 times. The goal difference between them is 46-31 in Arsenal's favour. During the last 63 meetings, Everton have won 11 times. There's been 13 draws and Arsenal have won 39 times. The goal difference in this one is 128-58 in Arsenal's favour. Players that have played for Everton and Arsenal. Come on, Dave, break out the biscuits. Give these people a chance, will you? What are they? Cheap and nasty, sir. You've been at that supermarket up the road, haven't you? Hey, spend a bit of cash. Anyway, Mikel Arteta, Kevin Campbell, Francis Jeffers, the so-called fox in the box. Hey, do you think so? Skodran Mustafi, 2 right feet, 2 left knees. Martin Keown, Philippe Senderos. Theo Walcott, Alex Iwobi, the last-minute Everton trolley dash in the transfer window, £35 million, thank you very much. And goalkeeper Richard Wright.
Odegaard! Odegaard! He's the captain of the Arsenal and they call him Odegaard. Odegaard! Odegaard! He's the captain of the Arsenal and they call him Odegaard!
It's time to enter the gunroom for a natter.
Hi, welcome to the Gun Room. With me, I've got the Podcateers. What a full house this is. Paul's not here, he's still celebrating. He's probably in a bin somewhere or in the curb. He's had a massive weekend. And who can blame him? Nick, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, always a pleasure. What you been up to? Anything much? Crying into your duvet or something like that?
I'm just ready for the next game.
Yeah, let's get this one out of the way and get onto a champion pod. Tom, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Hope everyone as well. And let's not think about it too much because I honestly think it's a one-off. I really do believe that. So hopefully
we've got an hour of this nonsense to talk about it. Yeah.
You know, I hope on Saturday we'll see a better performance, that's for sure.
Hey, it's not the end of the world. Jay, how are you?
Yeah, all good, thanks. All good. I hope everyone's all right.
You didn't go, did you?
No, we didn't go, no. Thankfully. No,
you just had stuff for BT Sport, I suppose.
Yeah.
Lauren, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. All good here.
You look a bit thawed out now in Barcelona. Has the weather changed? It's getting a bit nippy again here.
Oh, it's still cold. It's been raining all day, which I haven't seen in a while. So, but it's not as cold as it was before, so...
There I was this morning out on the back door. Head off to Barcelona. Right. Well, let's get cracking. It's not the upbeat pod that we all expected, but it's the way the cookie crumbles. Happy 72nd birthday to Eddie Kelly, part of the double winning side of 1971. We salute you, sir. Hope you're well. Well, as I said, not the result we wanted, but it had to be said deep down. We kind of expected this at some point. And when you've got Sean Dyche and Everton, it's a recipe for disaster. How did you view it, Nick? We'll talk about it in as much depth as we can, obviously, because we don't want to get too morose.
Yeah, I thought it was a great hire for them, honestly. And of course, we were the ones to catch them first. We haven't won at Goodison since 2017. I just remember the two matches against Dyche last year, 1-0 off the Odegaard free kick, but that was tough sledding. And then the 0-0 at home in January. So I'm like, here he's back. And I mean, love him as a manager. And there's 36 games out of the season where I can be pretty happy and okay with what he does. But the two times when we face him, he's so old school. You have to respect it, but playing against him and like the fact that we still have to play them again. That was just rescheduled today. In about 3 weeks, we'll get them again. It's like, man, not a guy in a playing style you want to ever come up against.
No, not really. It's a tough haul. I said to Paul that when they were choosing a manager, I said it's got to be Sean Dyche to sort it all out. And he gets a bit of fire in the belly. Let's have a look at that team then. It was 4-3-3. It was Ramsdale, Zinchenko, Gabriel, William Saliba, Ben White, Martin Odegaard, Thomas Partey, Granit Xhaka, Martinelli, Eddie Nketiah, and Bukayo Saka. Jay, no real surprises there, was there, apart from the performance, really?
No surprises. I think I agree with Nick. Great appointment from Everton's point of view. I think anybody that they would have faced first game would have come up against that kind of performance. You know, it's just unfortunate that it was us. They didn't sign anyone in January. So it's not like you've got any new players trying to make a point. It was all to do with the manager, and he definitely got a bounce and he got a tune out of those players, because all season they have been rough, haven't they, Everton?
A bit diabolical.
Yeah, and he got a tune out of the players. And on the day, I don't think we were as bad as a lot of people made out. I thought we passed the ball pretty well. Obviously not our best performance of the season, but I don't think we were as bad as everybody made out. And I think we passed the ball. It was just we didn't have that cutting edge maybe up front. And we conceded a really, really terrible goal. You know, like I hate that goal. You know, I hate those, you know, other than the goals that, you know, that we gift opposition, I really can't stand those straight from a set piece. We should do better with, you know, those kind of goals. It was a performance that you expect really from Everton. And like we've already said, one to forget.
Yeah, it was the they call it the new manager bounce, don't they? Tom, they were cutting us down for space and time. We never really got our flow going, just in little isolated passages. We spent a lot of time going backwards in periods as well. We got a bit bullied, didn't we, in periods, because they were kind of three or four players surging towards whoever had the ball. Sean Dyche knows how to do this. I mean, he's done it against us plenty of times. It's a hostile ground filled with expectation and hope. But the annoying thing is we seem to come up against these teams and they know how to do it. And it's the same recipe every time. Cutting down space, cutting down time. A fair and accurate description?
Yeah. I have to be honest, as soon as he got the job and I realised it was us that was up, I said to my brother, and he agreed, we're going to lose this one. I've just got a feeling because of he knows how to beat Arteta, because I don't know if you guys have had a look. Before I came on, I had a look at the head-to-head record. It's actually quite bad on Arteta. It's got 3 wins for Sean Dyche, I think 2 draws, and 1 win for Arteta. And obviously that was the 1-0 that Nick mentioned last season. So really, Dyche at the moment is getting the better of him and everything. And I think the midfield was the issue as well, especially with those 3 massive blokes midfield. I think it was Unana, Decore, and I can't remember the other guy in the middle.
Unana lives next door to you, best mate.
they just overran us. And I agree that I don't think we were as bad as we made out, like most fans have made out to be. I don't think it, like I said, I honestly think it is just a one-off. And hopefully on Saturday we'll get a response from them, because even against United this happened, obviously different game and everything, but even back then I said our record at Old Trafford is terrible. I wasn't expecting us to win. I was hoping for a draw, to be honest. So I'm hoping that they'll get it out of the system and come away with it and beat Brentford at the weekend. So we'll wait and see.
Lauren, this experience has got to be good for us, isn't it? Because you weren't going to just wander through the rest of the fixture list and just turn up trumps every time. So, I mean, they've tasted defeat now again. The first one, you couldn't really say anything about because that was against the run of play and everything else. But surely this experience will make us better going forward.
You'd hope so. I think... overall, the weekend wasn't so bad. I think we kind of, obviously the early kickoff, we were anticipating the worst to come after us, but I'm sure we're going to mention it. Obviously the City result went in, the Spurs City game that went in our favor. So I think, you know, looking back on it now, it doesn't seem as bad as it did at, you know, early afternoon on Saturday. It was a bit depressing, but even when, you know, you take yourself kind of out of the first initial reaction of, okay, we've just dropped 3 points against a team who are battling relegation, you know, not the best. Obviously, we're talking new manager bounce, but at the end of the day, we're still still top with the game in hand. I think we just need to remember not to overreact, and hopefully the players and the whole team have the same mindset and are able to push forward, like Tom said, and get a result on Saturday. And that's the most important thing to take off the back of it, is of course the reaction to the loss.
Nick, the warning signs were there early on, and I didn't quite expect them to come out of the trap so fast. They came out a bit like Arsenal at times this season, and they really went for it, didn't they?
Yeah, it was one of those games where I was really hoping we could get an early goal, and I think that would have taken the crowd out of it right away. I mean, them finally getting a new manager, the fans were so hungry for anything. And as it started to, they started to create some chances. They had some early corners, and you could see right away what they were trying to do to go to that back post. And that's ultimately how they scored. And something you just wanted to get something early to just to deflate it all. And we did that against when we played at Brentford, and we did that at Palace beginning of the season. Just an early goal takes a hostile environment out of it. And to be fair, we did that at Old Trafford as well before it was disallowed. So we've had a pretty good track record of starting quickly away. And the only one I can think of when we didn't was the Leeds game. And that was really tough as well. So something that I think is intentional, but not something we can do. I mean, like you said about Dyche, he's all about the energy and the passion. And with that midfield that he played, I mean, it was all power, all pace, and really set us back a little bit.
There was a real appetite there. They really went for it. Saka fed Nketiah who had a bit of a spoon hoof, didn't he? That was a shame. Miles off. I think it's still in the atmosphere. It's like Harry Kane's penalty. Ben White lost Onana. Calvert-Lewin fluffed his lines. Onana looked good value, didn't he, Jay? My Patrick Vieira sort of description isn't very good, but physically he's quite fast as well.
Like Tom said, I think all three of them. I think it was Idrissa Gueye who was playing. It was the other one, wasn't it? All three of them in that centre midfield were fantastic. You know, I tweeted Paul after the game and I said, you know, I bet Frank Lampard was watching on thinking, you absolute bastards. You know, you've absolutely done me here. You know, because these are the same players that have been absolutely terrible all season and stunk the place out. And you, I mean, they were transformed, weren't they? And they made it hard for the midfield. They compressed. Not just the midfield three, but they were set up to make the game very narrow, weren't they? And they restricted space, and ultimately, the majority of the games this season, we've controlled the midfield. Even at Old Trafford, we controlled the game at midfield. We controlled the midfield, but we didn't. We struggled to do that. We still had chances, but yeah, like you said, that Onana did look good. But I actually thought Idrissa Gueye was the better out of the three of them. He was just throwing himself. I mean, they all were. They were putting their bodies on the line, you know, blocking, pressing, and made it really difficult for us.
Yeah, Doucouré probably could have scored the best chance of the match up to that point. Then Saka had a chance, which was cleared by Cody. Calvert-Lewin then had a chance. He's not quite sharp enough to finish anything off yet. And then Nketiah, I thought this was brilliant. He had this delightful little run between defenders that deserved a lot more. And it came into Odegaard, Tom. I actually thought that was it. And it just shot over the rooftops.
Yeah, it was a shame because he's quite good in these situations, Odegaard. And to be honest, what a great play by Nketiah. That was actually quite enjoyable.
Brilliant.
But, you know, look, you know, collectively, we just weren't good enough. I can't even name you a person that I honestly think was just fantastic. I mean, the only one I probably could say that you can see he was trying a lot is probably Bukayo Saka. But in terms of quality from performances that we've seen recently, I can't tell you who was our best player, to be honest.
I think you're not too far wrong there, because I looked up the players' ratings and he was one of the top ones. Ben right. White, surprisingly, was at the bottom. But we'll get to that because we got some emails on Ben White as well. But Ben, I'm starting with that lark again, calling him Ben Affleck. Nick, it's got your name there, so I should read it properly, shouldn't I? The goal by Telkowski, you have to question, why was Odegaard marking him when you've got all these big lads and they just seem to be all pulled out of shape?
Well, it was originally Saka, and he went right past Saka, like passed him off to Odegaard. And yeah, that's not a one-on-one I ever want to see. they had a pretty cheeky play, blocked off Saliba. And I think Saliba was probably going to get there, and they did a good job of setting a pick for him. So credit to them, because like I said earlier, they kept running that same look, and they got the service that they needed. And ultimately, I think that it was going to take something like that for either team. It was just one of those classic lunchtime kickoffs. It reminded me so much of that Leeds game earlier, to where it was going to take one moment of magic. And as good as Nketiah has been, and I thought he wasn't bad, and I thought he created his chance really well in the first half, just really fluffed his line, but really missed Gabriel Jesus in this game. Somebody who just could get a half step and create something, go off the dribble when, you know, they have so many guys behind the ball. So yeah, really, really missed him, but credit to them. They Everton knew exactly what they came to do, and they did that.
Just looking at the ratings, Saka was on 4.0 with Zinchenko. So those two kind of stood out for various people. Now, Lauren, a penalty, apparently. Gabriel sort of all over the place, barged into a player. What did you make of that?
Yeah, it was an interesting one, because I think it could have been given. I don't think the camera angle did it any justice, to be honest, because it seemed to really focus on Gabriel kind of shoving into the other player, but there definitely was contact on him. I think it must have been just after a corner or a free kick. I can't remember exactly what it was now, but yeah, he was up in the box. And speaking of players who had good games, I thought he was pretty good. I thought he was pretty solid. He's been so solid over the past few games, and I don't think he's getting enough credit. But I think it could have been given. It definitely could have been given. And I think that would have been, it would have changed the game, obviously. I mean, that goes without saying, but it just didn't seem like we were going to get anything from open play. It really felt as though they were completely stifling us. So I think that would have been the best case scenario, got the penalty and then maybe tried to, you know, break them down, get past their defense. But it was just impossible. We mentioned it last weekend, them playing organized, and you know, they didn't miss a beat. They were exceptional. And it's frustrating, but it definitely was the best performance that we've seen against us in the league this season. And it's crazy to think it was Everton. But, you know, a manager comes in and he knows exactly how to play against Arteta. And that's exactly what we saw. We just weren't up to scratch, and they were better than us in every sense of the word, unfortunately, on the day. And a penalty would have been dream case scenario. And I think it could have been given. I do think it could have been given.
We've seen them given in the past, but not a lot.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. And there was definitely contact. But like I said, it's one of those ones you just have to accept and move on, I guess.
Jay, it's probably Lampard's probably finest hour getting that those two defenders in, wasn't it? Telkowski and Cody. And you could see that they were completely solid. That back four wall was absolutely immense, but those two in particular just shone.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in the second half, you know, when Trossard came on, we were looking to play him in, and I don't know if you guys picked up on it, but how many crosses did we put in and they just cleared it? Whether it was not being able to beat the first man, or when we did do that, they were the first to the ball. And then obviously we've already mentioned the three in front were like equally as committed. And I don't know whether we're giving Dyche a little bit too much credit with knowing how to play or how to beat Arteta. I just think, like I said, on the day, I think it would have, if they'd have played anybody, I think it would have been the same result. I think it was just, you know, those sort of unmeasurable factors that you add into it, ultimately things that shouldn't really affect a football match, you know, things like a new manager bounce that, I mean, that's, you know, you can't measure that, can you? And because ultimately it was the same players, but they put in a performance that I mean, there's a very strong chance to still get relegated. You know, we might not see that this season. You know,
oh, don't upset Paul. Come on. He's cock-a-hoop now. He could put a bit of string round his leg. He's that high up in the air.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Calvert-Lewin on the day was okay, pretty good. And like Lauren said, I thought Gabriel played well, one of our better players. I've always quite liked Calvert-Lewin. He's decent, and he's obviously struggled with injury, but he should have scored the header. And it was, I mean, you were, I don't think we were never out of the game. You know, it's not like we just rolled over, and this was the encouragement, you know, trying to take positives from it. We didn't just, you know, it wasn't that long ago. We would go into games like this, concede a goal, and then just fold up and just not be able to deal with the atmosphere, deal with the physicality. And I never felt that was the case. We were still looking to go forward. They were still, I know Arteta's substitutions have been criticised, but I'd still rather a manager goes to get something out of the game that, you know, he made, you know, he's got it right tactically and from a substitute's point of view so many times this season that I think he went to try and get a point. And, you know, it didn't happen. It didn't work. But and obviously the players that he brought off, you know, Partey and Odegaard, maybe in hindsight, maybe not. I don't think he would think it was a mistake at the time. I don't think he thinks it's a mistake now.
I think there's something still going on with Partey with the old ribs, isn't there? That's why he took him off as a precaution. But obviously it was banana skin in the end.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think he looked on the day. I don't think he was labouring, or I don't think he was, you know, he just, like we said, they made it tough for us and they were set up to pressure us. And Everton were instilled with that sort of fear of God. You know, they had that discipline, that, you know, that kick up the arse that they've had all week that they haven't had all season. And that's what you're going to get with Dyche. I don't think tactically Dyche, you know, he didn't set them up massively different, or I don't think he outwitted Arteta from a tactical point of view. He just got them to compete. And that's obviously what you're going to get, like Nick said, like Tom, we've all said it now, you know, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get that commitment. You're going to get that, that putting your body on the line is an absolute minimum. And like, just want to forget, we got away with it. Ultimately, like Lauren said at the top, we got away with it, didn't we? Because of the Spurs game.
So. Nick, I read your name there, so I got it right. Where does Frank Lampard go? I mean, he went to Chelsea. They weren't really clicking. And then Tuchel came in and started to work his magic. Now he's been to Everton and it's gone into a negative. Is he actually good enough to be a Premier League manager?
I don't think so. I don't think he's ever been good enough, to be honest. I think when he was at Derby.
Say it as it is.
I really rated him as a player, but as a manager, he comes across so arrogantly, and I think just struggles to, I think with the man management, I think you see that a lot with top players struggle to relay what they see because they are a top player. They're just like, just do it like I did it. And I think it's pretty rare for top players to go out and be great managers. So when he was at Derby, he had Mason Mount on loan. I think he had another player on loan. Harry Wilson was on loan there. And I think those were two Premier League players playing in the Championship, and that really pushed them for his best years there. And I think underperformed at Chelsea. I think underperformed at Everton. And I mean, I think he's due to just do punditry, honestly, but even that respectfully, but I don't know if he's cut out to do that. I mean, his two stints as manager were so short, and I can't see him going abroad. So it's like,
Only manager I know that was as crap as that was Gary Neville, and he lasted about 3 weeks, didn't he? absolutely shocking. Well, Trossard filled us with a little bit of excitement, and there's plenty to come from that player. I think it's only a matter of time until he starts netting the goals. Now, Partey was taken off as a precaution. We pointed that out. And Jorginho came on. He's been getting quite a bit of flack on social media. Not that I go with it. They're two different types of players. Tom, where do you sit with that substitution?
I think it's hard. Again, it's harsh. It's, you know, it's the first game for him in an Arsenal shirt. We weren't exactly playing particularly well, like any of the players and everything. You know, he's a midfielder that we've bought in, not because he was our first choice that we wanted to buy him straight away. We went and got and trying to get, what's his name, Caicedo. And it just wasn't working. Forever, whatever the situation was, Brighton just kept saying it wasn't for sale. We go and get a guy that has won Champions League. He's won the Euros. I think it was a bargain, you know, 12 million. I don't think you can complain about that. And the fact that, you know, if everyone was playing well and he comes on and he has a terrible performance, I would be more worried about that. But I don't understand what people expected from him, because even as a Chelsea player, he wasn't a flamboyant, exciting player. He was just a guy that recycled the ball, passed it along, you know, kept it simple all the time. So I honestly don't get why people have an issue with his performance in particular. I know it's exciting when it's a new player and everything, but it, you know, he just didn't work out. But like I said, he's never been known for your, he's going to score many goals or be as creative as Odegaard or anything like that. So I don't want to give him too much stick and give him more time, basically. That's my message to the fans.
Just quite right, Tom. Quite right. We'll come to that because there are a few emails to deal with that. Let's do some stats, put the old binoculars on. Everton first, Arsenal second. 12 shots for Everton, 15 for Arsenal. 4 shots on target for them, 3 for us. 29% possession for them, 71% for us. 252 passes for them, 639 for us. 71% pass accuracy. That's a lot closer. 86% for us. Right, we're going to move on to, can you believe it? Over 180 minutes of football. And the only goal we get out of these two games is someone else's. So it's really annoying. On to the WSL. West Ham, after a goal fest at Leeds, Lauren. We were expecting at least one, weren't we? take us through the lineup, Lauren.
Yeah, it was a pretty disappointing weekend all around, to be honest. But the lineup was slightly different. Zinsberger was in goal. Then we had Maritz come in at right back for Wienreuter. Ruben Moyes started centre back alongside Rafaela and Cathy at left back. Lee Williamson was pushed up into the midfield because Leah Valti was out with an injury. So that was, you know, I think that's the second time we've seen her play that role this season. She was joined by Little and Manum to make up the midfield there. And then we had Blackstenius on top with Hurting playing on the left and Ford on the right. So notable absentees there, of course, Valti, who was injured. We had Wienreuter on the bench and Katie McCabe also didn't make the team. So I was a bit surprised about that, but, you know.
Leah Williamson, by the way, has got a book out in March. So I can't remember the title of it, which is a bit remiss. I worked at it, practiced it, and it's just gone up into the ether. Never mind.
I think it's a long one. I can't remember it either.
It's massive. It's not one that just rolls off your tongue. It's you can have the power, blah, blah, blah. He-Man. Anyway, first and most obvious question. We failed to secure a proven striker in a transfer window. That's got to be a key factor, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, we were looking at a 0-0 draw here. And I mean, West Ham are a decent team, of course. But, you know, if we want to be serious about this title charge, you need to be scoring. You need to be at least scoring against teams like this. And we weren't able to. And, you know, it's a bit unfortunate because obviously Blackstenius and Lena Hurting, they're just not really, it's not really clicking for them at the moment. I mean, Ford has had a great season, but it's difficult when, you know, your striker and your other winger just aren't hitting the stride that they need to be hitting. So it was really disappointing. It was a really, really disappointing performance. A lack of options from the bench as well. I think the biggest disappointment came from the lack of involvement of the new signings that we made. So Pelova, Kuhl, you know, they've been really promising. They're both young, they're both new to the WSL, but they've been so promising in what we've seen from them before. I think a lot of people were questioning Ida Val's decision not to play them in this game when it proved to be so difficult to...
I was a bit surprised.
It was a weird one. Mm, yeah, absolutely. So I think a lot of people were surprised, if not annoyed, about the lack of trust.
We're
given
Arsenal
to
fans. We're always annoyed about something.
Absolutely, absolutely. Look, it was a tough weekend, you know. So yeah, it was disappointing, and I think Idavel comes out and says it himself: the lack of striker, or the lack of striker that we got the lack of striker that we got in the January window.
We're going to persevere with you, Lauren. We'll cut you off or anything. You're fine.
Thank you. I appreciate the patience. It's been a difficult few days. The lack of striking options that we got in during the last transfer window is definitely going to come back and bite us, unfortunately. And you know how unpredictable these injuries are, so it's not looking good, but hey ho, we will persist.
I mean, what sort of team could let go of Beth Mead and Vivian Miedema? I mean, you know, if you take those two out of the equation, you're going to be a bit light up front. Mm-hmm. The goalkeeper, Mackenzie Arnold, was a standout. She denied, she was just blistering. See, I'm copying you now, Lauren. there was a penalty claim. Dagny Birinjar's.Trudur. Yeah, what's her name?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, I'm not going to try it.
you've got to say that, haven't you? It was missed by officials. Did you think that it was a pen? I thought it might be.
Of course. Yeah, and again, this was exactly like the men's game. It was so frustrating. It didn't really look like we were going to... Obviously, the goalkeeper had a good game, but it just didn't look like we were going to get anything from open play, and I think a penalty would have certainly helped. So I'm sure that's a biased opinion, but I think it definitely could have been given. Unfortunately, was missed by the officials, as you said.
I mean, we were better in the second half. I think we had 9 attempts on goal, but no end product. Blastinius had a couple of good chances. Before this game, we were the only team in WSL to have 100% away record this term, winning all 4 games until we came up a very robust and resolute West Ham. Hurting created probably the best chance of the match in the first period, getting to the byline, picking out Blackstinius, who blazed over sloppily. Williamson then lofted a clever pass into the path of Manham. On the move, she was. She's like Grease Lightning, that girl, isn't she? It's like her heels were on fire. And she saw her effort saved by Arnold. Blackstinius probably had another really good chance to mention, an outstretched foot from the goalkeeper Arnold in the second period, 65 minutes. And Raphael was also denied after a clever corner routine. And Arnold pushed the defender's volley impressively clear of danger, 75 mm-hmm. minutes. The stats were, they were in favour of us, but stats are like that, aren't they? Possession, 31% for them, 69% for us, 2 shots for them. 21 for us, 1 shot on target for them, 9 for us, 1 corner, 8 corners for us, 9 fouls and 5 fouls. Right, let's get to the emails. There's some really chewy ones here, guys. So we've already mentioned about Jorginho, but it will come up. It is one of those recurring themes. Nick, Edu, this is from James, by the way. Oh, I'm doing that thing again. oh, it happened last week. At least I can still see myself. Not that that's a good thing. Edu said the profile was for young and upcoming players, and then did a complete 360 and signs a Chelsea reject. How is this possible? He says. Over to you, Nick. Take that.
Yeah, I think, well, people would have been complaining if we didn't sign somebody like him.
Absolutely.
Jorginho's essentially a replacement for Mohamed Elneny, who's been confirmed out for the rest of the season, at least most of it. So I get that him and Trossard aren't exactly the exact profile that we've had from these previous windows, but we're on an 18-month contract. We're going for it right now. And I think we've seen the positives of Jesus and Zinchenko, just their experience and their winners and what that's done. And Jorginho's in that same boat too, slightly older, but just another older head in the dressing room that's been there before, and such a young team. I mean, some of these players haven't been in, I mean, even last year, like they hadn't been in a top 4 hunt. Now we're in a title hunt. And it's like, how many players have ever done that outside of Jesus and Zinchenko, and Jesus is coming back. So having another one in that boat, I think, is a huge plus. And I mean, having him thrown on in a game like this, I think in the Everton game, I think is a show of trust as well.
He's got to be given time though, hasn't he? You know, can't expect miracles.
It's not the same as Chelsea. I mean, Chelsea played with a lot different system. And I mean, he's been through so many managers at Chelsea and playing for the national team with Italy. It's all different. And, you know, I don't know if we're ever going to get the best out of him, because I don't know if we're going to have him long enough, but he will be able to do a job. I mean, he's an upgrade on Elneny in that same spot. So I am well aware he's not the profile, but for that price, for those, that experience on that short term of a deal, like it's great for sure.
Tom, this is from Redman GLFL. So I think that's Gunners for Life. Yet again, so much focus was spent on one player. We missed out on better alternatives. What's your take on that one? It is January, Redman.
Yeah,
hard to do. I don't know whether you've ever followed football before this January, but it's really hard to do. Tom, over to you.
It's hard to do, and also let's just remember a few years ago, the one thing I always felt guilty about how people they got fed up with Wenger, that we just wanted to change. And, you know, I understand it during that time. The one thing that used to really infuriate me with Arsene Wenger was the lack of transfer activity, either in the summer or in January. But now we've got a manager that's actually saying that the board are backing him. And let's be honest, they have backed him. You know, every summer transfer since Arteta's been here, there's always been movement. Even the winter one, I know last season was bad because we didn't get a striker, but we were linked with Vlahovic and we didn't get him, but we got consumed by Juventus. And then the same thing happened with Mudryk. But I said to you guys, I'm happy that he went to Chelsea, because I wasn't sure about him for the price that we were going to pay for him. And when we got Trossard, I was even
happier.
Well,
he was so good, Tom. He was taken off at halftime. He was
exactly. At the moment, it's not working for him either. And then, like I mentioned it a few minutes ago about how we were going for the Brighton guy, but they just kept saying he wasn't for sale. So what are you supposed to do? Just sit there and go, all right, we won't come back, and just leave it at that. Like Nick said, it was a replacement for Elneny. And I genuinely do think he is an upgrade to Elneny. As much as I like Elneny's attitude and his passionate for Arsenal positivity, but I just think this was a good move. And like I said, 12 million for 18 months is a bargain. And I just don't understand Arsenal fans that they were moaning that we had a board that wasn't investing, that wasn't doing the right things. But now they haven't got the number one target. I know it's annoying and stuff, but that's just football in general. But we're still buying players, so they're still trying at least something. It's when they don't try used to infuriate me more than anything. So, no, I'm happy with the fact that they've actually backed him even in January. And like you said, it's the hardest month to move on anybody or to try and buy somebody.
Plus, I think Nick said not too long ago, everyone knew how much we had to spend. So we had that against us as well. That was a real issue. Lauren, we're going to come to you with this one, because we've got two ladies are emailing me. it's both on the same subject, so we'll deal with them in one thing. Is Ben White really up to the right side? Found out in recent games, and as I said, his rating was 3.3. And then Sheila says, is the right side of our defence vulnerable? The last two games, Ben White has been rinsed, and that's Sheila.
Okay. I think that's a bit harsh.
Poor old Ben White.
I think that's a bit harsh. I mean, obviously, he didn't have a great game against United. I think that's the game he was taken off. And, I mean, we all admitted, like, you know, he picked up a card and we said, yeah, you know, better to take him off to be safe. And we're very, very lucky in that position that we have Tomiyasu. I think if we didn't have Tomiyasu, people probably wouldn't be questioning it as much. I didn't think he was that bad against Everton. Again, I think it was a poor team performance. We just weren't able to break them down. No one looked particularly good.
I think quite a few passes went astray in that match as well. And then his one was very noticeable to Odegaard, and that's when Onana got away. But, yeah, sorry, carry on.
No, absolutely. And I think it's a bit harsh. I think once a player has a bad game, you kind of have an eye on them. So I think a lot of people criticizing Martinelli as well, because he's been quiet for a few games. You know, it doesn't really matter what he does unless he has an exceptional game. People aren't going to notice it or pick it up. They're just going to brush it aside and say he had a bad game. Ben White, I think we need to remember back. He's been, first of all, he's playing out of position this season. We've put him onto the right back. He's done an exceptional job up until two games ago, where he might have had a misplaced pass or he picked up a silly card. Let's not be too harsh. He's been phenomenal. The way I put it was a disappointing game in a very promising season. And I think, you know, people are allowed to have an off day as long as the team are able to lift them up. And unfortunately, that wasn't the case this weekend. So it was probably more apparent than it could have been. But no, I think Ben White is more than up to it. I think he's been so solid for us throughout the season. Let's not turn our back on a really, really great player because of one or two bad performances or below standard performances.
Well, podcast family, just remember a few, about 4 weeks ago, I think it was, Gabriel was under the cosh and they were saying that he wasn't in form or suddenly sort of voicing a displeasure about his performances. Jay, Ben Jones says, we don't have a plan B against this type of opposition. He means Everton, of course. Europa League, don't make me laugh. Yeah, basically he doesn't rate our chances going forward.
Well, yeah, okay. I suppose against Everton, you want...
just one result, that's all it is.
You want an option from the bench, maybe at centre forward, and we don't have that. Like Nick said, we're missing Jesus. I suppose in an ideal world, you'd like to call upon maybe a slightly more physical striker, you know, like a Giroud type, you know, target man to call upon, but we haven't got that. Plan B, do we have one? Well, I think we tried.
Well, I'll tell you what, Plan A, Jay, hasn't done us too poorly, has it? No, I mean, we're top of the league.
Arteta tried to change things. You know, Vieira came on, Jorginho came on, Trossard. These are good players. You know, these aren't just, you know, These are players that can make the difference. It was just we came up against a team with, you know, a deep defence and that were willing to put the bodies on the line. And like you said, it's a one off. Obviously, when Jesus picked up his injury, we were all concerned that Eddie wasn't able to step up. Well, he has stepped up. But, you know, we've been like, you know, even before Jesus's injury, we were like up front, you know, we've only got two recognised strikers. We're badly missing Smith Rowe because he would have definitely added to something. And again, you know, you look at the Jorginho substitution. If we'd have had a fully fit Smith Rowe on the bench, Jorginho might not have even came on. He might have put ESR further forward.
There's two ways to look at it. I tend to look at it from the point of view is we've got a lot stronger bench now. We've got a pool of players, quality players that can affect the outcome of games. It's not we're not bringing on, we're not bringing on substandard players. We're bringing on quality, and we might not have a plan B per se as a number nine or a number, you know, as a central striker, but I believe we've got a lot. We're a rounded side. We've got a lot of options going forward. And I mean, every team is going to drop points. We've seen it this weekend and we'll see it. United will drop points. City will drop points. We will drop points. And as a consequence of dropping points, obviously players' performances are going to drop. As far as I just wanted to just add something to the Jorginho point, Jorginho will be fine. He will be fine. And like I said last week, at Chelsea, I wasn't his biggest fan, right? And I've got to be honest, I wasn't his biggest fan. However, Arteta's earned that trust. And obviously, we're going to back Jorginho 100%. When he came on, he actually did a lot better, I believe, than a lot of people give him credit for. He isn't quick, and that's what he ultimately is going to get criticised for. But on the ball, technically, you watch it back. On the ball, his passing was crisp. He didn't make too many misplaced passes, and he was always looking to go forward. He isn't quick, like I said, and that is ultimately what he's going to get criticised on. And we all know that the fan base needs a scapegoat. But we all know that. As soon as something goes
wrong... Now Granit's not stepping up to the plate. We've got to have a look round, haven't we?
As soon as something goes wrong, we need someone to blame. I'm sure we all saw the similar sort of accounts going after certain players and the manager and whatever and the substitutions, blah, blah, blah. I still stand by what I said. If Smith Rowe was fit, you might have seen Xhaka drop a little bit deeper, Jorginho not come on and push Smith Rowe into a more sort of a left eight going forward to support Trossard. But look, Arteta went for it. He went to get something out of the game. And I'll always back him for that. You know, you need to see a proactive manager, don't you? Especially in the position that we're in now. You know, like, it's a tough game. You know, but again, like we keep saying, for me, it was a blow, but it wasn't a fatal blow. You know, we came out of it, I still think, with a fair amount of confidence. We didn't take a massive battering. It's not like we just keeled over and just took a heavy defeat. Look, it was a blow, but I think obviously with the other result that happened over the weekend, it's nowhere near as bad as it could have been.
Nick, Steve says it's no good comparing Partey to Jorginho because there is no other player like Partey, what Partey does. So he's got a point, isn't he? All these comparisons.
Yeah, they're definitely different players, but they play the same position. I mean, same thing as Elneny. I mean, he slots in there, but he's not Thomas Partey. But I think we're going to need Jorginho to do different things, and I could see Jorginho. I mean, ideally, Jorginho doesn't come on in most games, but that's why we needed cover there. So, like I said, I hope we don't see him too much because that means that means Partey's playing, and usually if he's playing, we're winning, and that's what I want to see. So, and going back to what Jay was saying, I feel like us as a fan base, you can tell we haven't been in a title hunt in a long time because it takes our second loss this season and everybody's up in arms. That was the worst performance ever. We need to set higher standards than this. We need to drop three players for this next game. I'm like, how did we get to this point? And it takes, you know, like I said, our second loss, only our fourth time dropping points all season. And we're all up in arms. I mean, I don't think we've been top of the table at this point, as far as I can remember, since 2008, and that was the Eduardo season, and that was what, 15 years ago. And you can just tell we're clutching at straws when something doesn't go right. It's like, oh my gosh, just the demons of the past are coming back, and we've all been traumatized, we've all been hurt. But it's just a reminder to me, like, man, us as a fan base, like, it's been a long time since we've been in this. And to me, watching it back, it was just...
We are quite a destructive fan base. Not us, but there's an element, isn't there? No matter what goes on, no matter what you're doing, you know, Odegaard isn't good enough. He's not physical enough and bloody blah. This guy is not good enough. And it happens on a regular basis. Some of these emails, I mean, you know, I have resisted the temptation to read them out in the last few weeks because they are very, very negative. But as we've said, there has to be a whipping boy, doesn't there? And it looks like Jorginho. But I think as the season wears on, he will come to the fore. He's got the experience. That's what we needed. That's what we were looking for. And I think it was Jay said, you know, the bench is looking a little bit better as well. Stronger, more options. And once ESR comes back, I think we'll be on it. Tom, Josh, I'm hoping it's not Josh Kroenke. Josh says, we can't seem to get a deal over the line. We pick out a target and we just can't push it or won't push it. It smacks of every January. I disagree. I'm sure you'll have your say.
I disagree as well. At the end of the day, you can't foresee you go and do your business and then Chelsea come along and say, here's more money. Because at the end of the day, Shakhtar Donetsk don't care where he goes as long as they get more money. So it was sad and everything. But I said, I didn't know much about him. And like, since he's been at Chelsea, it hasn't worked out for him. All right, they have to give him time as well. And, you know, when you look at the past, it's like you said, January is not easy. I think the only time I remember a big player coming for us in January was Aubameyang, surely. Because I don't remember any other January that a big player like that came to Arsenal.
I think that's the last one I remember as well.
Oshavin as well. So this concept of like having a target and not getting a deal over the line, I'm sure there's plenty of deals during January and even in the summer with bigger clubs than Arsenal don't get it done because of certain issues and, you know, God knows what goes on with the agents and stuff like that. And like you said about some parts of the Arsenal fan base is so destructive where, you know, they just go off on one about something that it's not even that it happens every day in football. So I don't understand why they think it's only exclusively to Arsenal. I mean, look how pathetic the Chelsea thing sounds with Hakim Ziyech trying to go to PSG and apparently they didn't
file in the right... I thought you were sneezing or something then.
The fact that he was trying to go to PSG and apparently they didn't do the right paperwork or something, they didn't fax over or something like that. That's football. These things happen, you know? So I don't agree. I think as long as I see a club that's proactive and they're trying, and the last few seasons they have been, just look at the bargains we picked up for Odegaard. What was it, 30 million only last season on a full-term deal. To actually get him in, like buy him permanently, you add Tomiyasu.
Plus, doesn't this signature of, I'll go back to him again, Jorginho, doesn't that sort of let you know that there's some intention in the summer to bring in a full-time, better quality replacement?
Yeah, and not only that, I'm sure, maybe last season or the year before, we were linked to Jorginho, so there is something...
A couple of times.
Yeah, so there has been, it just seems like Arteta, you know, probably thought about it because the deal with Caicedo wasn't going through and thought, let's go back for Jorginho. And even in the summer, we were trying to get Douglas Luiz in from Aston Villa and that didn't happen. As long as I see a proactive football club and a board that's trying to get the players in and obviously the manager as well, I'm more than happy with that, to be honest. I'm confident that they will get more deals in the line done in the future. So, yeah, I don't agree.
Stuart, I'm not going to read yours out because yours is really depressing and we've had enough of that, I think. We've suffered enough for our art. Let's go to this City thing, Manchester City. 100 financial irregularities over 9 years. Only now is it being investigated. Nick, we had a conversation not too long ago where you actually asked, does FFP actually exist?
Yeah, I still don't know, but it's...
you are a man with great insight, sir. Great
insight. Speaking it into existence. Yeah, I mean, to me, it seems like somebody leaked all of this. Somebody had to know all this was going on and blew the whistle saying... I don't think anybody's surprised by any of these accusations. I think if anyone's surprised, it's that something could be happening. It's interesting because this is the Premier League bringing this. And it's like, well, you're the governing body. Why don't you do something? They're doing this under your nose. Why don't you do something about it? But apparently it has to go to an outside group that City can't appeal to. So I have no idea. 100 counts of this. It seems bad. I'm not going to hold my breath because I know what kind of lawyers the City can probably get. But...
Well, let's just remind ourselves, Nick, that it went to a court of arbitration for sport, CAS, and they overturned City's Champions League ban a few years back. So don't get too excited, Podders.
I read something that it can't go to that same arbitration group. So at least they're not going to be the ones bailing them out this time. But
yeah, they're all vacation spending the cash in the brown envelopes.
Yeah. When you talk about this kind of money, not that I am around that amount at all or have any experience with it, but you just have no idea what could happen. I mean, it reminds me of Juventus 2006. I know that was match fixing, not to say that this was the same type of thing, but 100 counts is 100 counts. I mean, I've read things about them tapping up youth players. I mean, they have an incredible youth system, continuing to pay off managers, paying them under the table. Who knows? It just, you have to get very sophisticated in finding ways around the rules, and they have done that. And so, yeah, I'm just interested to see what will happen. I'm not thinking it's going to happen this season, but I think maybe most interesting and what I care about the most is how would this affect City during the season. I think people think there's one of two ways, and they're very polarizing. One, it's the last dance. Pep galvanizes them, and they all know that this is maybe going to blow up soon, and they give it one last go, and he brings them together, and they push on and go on a stretch like they did against Liverpool. They won 15 games straight. Or it's something where they see the writing on the wall. Pep's on his way out, multiple players knowing that they're going to seek other pastures, and it kind of crumbles on its own. So I could honestly see either one. I don't think any penalty will happen this season. But to me right now, with where we're at as a club, it's how will this affect them? We're going to keep going on doing our own thing. But in reality is we are being hunted, and our main competitor is the one that – who knows how this is going to affect them. So I'm just interested to see that play out.
Tom, it's a bit of a mess. I mean, it should have happened years ago, shouldn't it? 9 years. They've allowed this to go for 9 years. It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, if they're genuinely guilty and they've broken all these rules, then you know, people talk about stripping their titles, but then the whole issue of what do you do with what's the point? Because then you've got to go and reset other Premier Leagues from old past seasons or something. But then the worrying thing for me is the implication down the line of, because straight away when they happened, I was like, but what about Chelsea? You know, all about this a loophole they found of FFP and stuff like that. If they're going to, I don't know if it's like, oh, we're going to make an example of City so everyone else gets scared and, you know, you're just going to start playing by the rules. Or they generally are looking into it and actually trying to get the people that have done it and actually make them basically find out if they're guilty or not. So I don't know, to be honest. And the amount of years I kept hearing about how come Arsenal play by the rules. And I mean, who knows who's playing by the rules and stuff like that in this you know, multi-billionaire industry and stuff like that. So I'm just worried about the future implication of football if they keep going around looking for teams to, because I guarantee you there's more, it's just more than City, 100% more than City. I mean, even Juventus, didn't they get like a 10-point deduction because of their financial irregularities as well? So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they're going to do with them, to be honest.
Jay, my only worry is that they deduct points off City and we wind up winning the league. And then everyone says, oh, well, you won it because of the deductions. I knew you'd say that. It's quite right, though, isn't it? Who cares?
Like, the guys, covered it great. I think they ultimately, I mean, it's not a surprise. And I think it's been a 9-year investigation. They've got all of this evidence. The first thing that sprung to mind was Glasgow Rangers. They were they were found guilty of numerous FFP irregularities or whatever, and they were relegated to the third division or whatever it was, third tier of Scottish football. Can't see them getting relegated, but a points deduction. Absolutely. They also, for me, they can't be allowed whilst this investigation is ongoing. For me, they can't be allowed to operate in the same way, because if we're talking about amending previous seasons,
then we have to stop immediately, don't we? They have to be stopped immediately. So for me, they can't go, they can't sign any players. You know, ultimately, I think they need to be, if they're found guilty, they need to be under a lot heavier sanctions. So, you know, all these, you know, I think one of the main problems was that the Etihad sponsorship, wasn't it? You know, them being able to, they're basically sponsoring themselves and with this massively inflated amount. All that's got to stop. And look, I hope the Premier League follow through. I can't see it. You know, I don't think anyone can. City got too much financial power, but I hope they do. And I'm not.
That's my only worry, Jay, is because they're such a big cheese financially that it's kind of going to be watered down. It'll be a hefty fine. I think they need to basically do something drastic, points deduction and a heavy fine. I don't think it's worth chucking them out.
No, well,
it's not going to happen, is it?
I think you should just wipe them out. Just
pie in the sky.
Just wipe them out or completely. But I mean, Chelsea people, are, you know, the obvious point as well is that what Tom said about Chelsea, but Chelsea haven't broken any rules yet. You know, they found a loophole. They used it to their advantage and they put these players on longer contracts and that's being changed in the summer by all accounts.
Yeah.
You know, every club in the Premier League, every club in Europe has to abide by the FFP rules. And by that, you have to submit all of your financial, you know, transactions. And I mean, some of the things that I've been hearing and reading, you know, they're just not, they're not releasing all of their, you know, payments to managers, like Nick said, and it's a mess and it's obviously going to take a while. But if they're found guilty, I mean, we're talking about the integrity of the game. You know, the football's been, the Premier League, the English game, it's an absolute cornerstone of most, you know, a lot of people's lives. And it's been like, it's something that's so huge. And if a club that has sprung up, because City haven't always been this powerhouse, you know, they were, you know, United's much smaller, younger, you know, smaller brother. And it would just, like I say, that it depends how much the Premier League care about the integrity. And obviously, they sell the rights to the league, don't they? They sell the rights to the television, you know, all over the world. And you live in hope that they care enough to just follow through, because where does it stop? You know, if you don't make an example of them and you just slap them with a £50 million fine, they're not going to care about that. That's not going to make any difference. So relegate them, take all the points.
And the money.
On the ground.
Right, if you're wondering what we're talking about, the Premier League released a statement on Monday that City had been charged following alleged breaches between 2009 and 10 and 2017 and 18 seasons. City posted their own statement later that afternoon, expressing their surprise. The issue has now been referred to an independent commission. It's choking there. As City nervously await the outcome, there have been reports from the Etihad that they could be relegated out of English top flight. But we discussed that. It's a non-runner. It's never going to happen. There's too much money. Lauren, obviously it's a breaking story. It's changing by the moment. What's your take on things?
I mean, when I read it, I was surprised, but I kind of wasn't at the same time. Obviously, it's something pretty shocking to read on a Monday morning. But, you know,
I would have rather it had been Tottenham, but, you know.
I mean, who are we in direct competition with right now, you know? The thing is, I don't think it's going to be something that's dealt with overnight. I think, you know, I honestly think earliest we're going to see the repercussions of this coming next season. So whatever about point deductions, this, that, the other, I don't think we're going to see it this season, because February, March, April, May, you know, 3 months. I don't think something of this scale is going to be solved in that amount of time. It's crazy though, and I think, you know, you obviously Chelsea found loopholes and they did all this, but I do wonder if there has been pressure from other leagues and from other footballing bodies pointing at the Premier League, especially after the crazy transfer window that we had, where the Premier League spent more than the other top four European leagues combined. Like, something doesn't work there. Something's not right. So I'm wondering, was it external pressure being put on to, I mean, obviously they've been collecting this information for years, but there has to have been something, whether it was internal or external, there had to have been, I suppose, like a switch go on somewhere that's brought this to light. It's crazy. It's, you know, we hear, okay, they've breached financial fair play, but to have 100 cases over 10 years, I think that's what's taken a lot of people by surprise. Yeah, I think the guys have covered
it
pretty well.
Someone in an office somewhere going, yeah. We're only on 98, when till we get to 100?
Yeah, it's something weird like that. I don't know what it was. Maybe they were collecting a certain amount to be able to have sufficient evidence to say, look, it's been going on for this long. We have 100 cases of it. It's beyond the point of ignoring it now. But, you know, I don't know. It's crazy. Yeah, the guys covered it pretty well there. I don't think we're going to, you know, it's impossible to know. It could go one of two ways in terms of the team. Either, like Nick said, they're going to take this as a fire and they're going to use it to kind of ignite the season, keep them going until the end, or we're going to see them crash and burn. And then with terms of how it's going to be dealt with, you never know. It could be completely brushed over, but I think there's too much external pressure from other footballing bodies, from other nations, from other, you know, outside sources that are going to make sure that this is dealt with in a manner that is fit and just. So we'll have to wait and see, though.
Well, let's be honest, Nick, they could tie this whole thing up in court for about a year and a half, couldn't they, really, realistically? And that's what they're probably going to do. The lawyers are going to work on that.
Yeah, if it took them this long to gather this much information, how long is it going to take them for that?
We're on 99. We're nearly there.
It's a huge amount going against him. And the fact that this isn't just the FA, I mean, this is the Premier League. Like Jay said, I mean, this is a monumental institution. But I guess to me, if you're the principal running a school and a kid in your school is doing something, why can't you just do something about it? I guess it has to be contended, but I'm like, they're one of your teams and they're going under behind your back. But I think maybe because of that, they're going to try to make them an example, because Chelsea's been freeloading. And I mean, and not that Newcastle's done anything yet, but Newcastle, similar takeover to City, to where, you know, you just,
maybe that's why they've been so reserved. I mean, I expected when they took over Newcastle, they'd just go out and splash the cash, but maybe there was something in the wind. It's like, be careful.
Yeah, not sure. And maybe the league is starting to think they're losing power and the power is going to the clubs. And
I don't think the clubs care. I don't think the owners care. I don't think the clubs care. I think there's a way around everything. And like Nick said, if the Premier League should just deal with it, they should take control, they should deal with it, and they should sanction them. I think a lot of the 100 or so infractions, I think they're repeated, aren't they? I think year after year, it's the same set that are just being repeated, which is obviously like even more, you know, if you know you're doing wrong, but you continue to do it wrong over year after year after year after year. I hope that they just deal with it. You know, it's done within a decent amount of time. It's just, nobody wants it to be dragged on, do they? You know, but
it's going to be, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it will.
So Jay wants them relegated. He wants money. He wants all that sort of thing. He wants Pep Guardiola tied to the back of a horse being flogged. Nick, what would you like to see out of this? Would you like the financial, what's more realistic is financial, isn't it? Points deduction, possibly.
Yeah, I want to see them relegated too. And I genuinely think that is a fair, I think it's a fair punishment. I think it's a fair punishment. I mean, they've come in and, like Jay said, I mean, if they've done this year on year, it just compounds. And it's like, they're making a fool out of the league. And I think the league, at least I wonder if they take it personally, like, okay, you've done this for so many years. You've taken us for fools. You know, we're going to come down strong. So this never happens again, because they are a billion dollar industry. And I don't think they're going to want to happen. I mean, what like you said, Tom, what good is a fine going to do? Nothing. I could, a transfer ban seems realistic.
Yeah.
But yeah, relegate him. Get him out of here.
It's quite a dodgy one though, Tom, isn't it? Realistically, what, because basically it's like biting the hand that feeds, isn't it? You've got these big, massive conglomerates full of cash propping up the FA and the Premier League. And then suddenly you're going to say, hold on a minute.
Yeah. You know, like I said, the, just playing devil's advocate for a moment, there's two, I saw two things that I was thinking about earlier about Man City. There, someone was talking about, you know, that's why they were so adamant not to allow the Newcastle purchase to happen. Obviously, it did happen in the end because they don't want that other team breaking through. They just want your traditional top six doing well and they couldn't care. And obviously, at the time when Man City were trying to get there, you know, I don't know if it's just like they're trying to punish them because it is Man City. I've always wondered like how much more corruption just goes on around football, even in the Premier League. We're not perfect or anything by any means. And another thing that Lauren mentioned was the how much the spending happened in January. And, you know, we moan so much about like not joining the Super League. And don't get me wrong, I always said that if that ever happened, I just think I'd turn away from it because it just gets ridiculous playing Barcelona, Real Madrid weekly. But, you know,
not my idea of football, that
exactly.
It should be a competition exciting and rare.
Yeah, exactly. And so when that was going on, but the point I was trying to make was like the amount of money that was spent in January compared to the rest of the leagues, you know, they probably, like Lauren said, there's going to be some kind of external pressure outside English football saying, well, you've got to get in your house in order, guys, because all this money that's getting spent in January, and then you look at the rest of the leagues, you know, it's not very good competition, you know. But in terms of what happens to them, I really don't know. Like, part of me thinks, you know, yeah, get them a point deduction and stuff like that and, you know, make sure it never happens again. But I don't know how much that will deter people because it's happened before in other leagues, like Jay said about the Scottish league with Rangers and stuff like that. But
Rangers probably spent £2.50 and then they were only allowed £1.50, but yeah. They've got a following of about 27.
The only question I was going to ask you guys, out there. The only question I was going to ask, if they do get a point deduction, who believes that Pep Guardiola will just walk away, or do you think he will carry on?
100%. No, I think he'd be gone. I think after this, if it's proven that there has been bad handling going on behind the scene, I think you'll see Pep walk away. Absolutely, 100%. I don't think he wants his name tarnished with that. I think he's he's a reputable manager. He's done it across the board. He's done it at Barcelona. You know, we're talking about managers who could walk into a job, and that is the perfect manager for anywhere. You know, he would have no problem finding somewhere else. And I think he wants his name to be respected more than he respects the club. So I think he'd be gone as soon as possible if a fine doesn't cover it, you know. I think for sure.
I saw one thing that was funny today because they were saying, well, Arteta was there at the time. So, I mean, like he's got some financial clout ambition and that he's actually getting his hand in his pocket and pulling out the money. So absolute rubbish. Next up for us, it's Brentford at home. Jay, what's your thoughts on that game? Surely we're going to raise the flag. We're going to get busy. We're going to go straight for the throat.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You are. You live in hope. there may be a few changes with the City game in the week. Brentford doing well. But I expect us to turn up and, you know, the atmosphere will be good in the stadium. And I expect us to start like we started most of the games, quick, crisp passing and attacking football. And I expect us to win.
Prediction?
2-0.
2-0. I like that. Lauren?
Are we home or away?
We're at home.
We're home. Then I'm going to go for 3-1.
Oh, I was going to write that. Tom, yours?
All right, I'll go for it. 3-0. We'll keep a clean sheet.
And finally, Nick.
I am going to go 1-1. I think we always seem to give up a goal at home. And as much as I want us to carry on, I've been hurt. And I mean, I think we should
emotionally scarred.
I know. Yeah, I'm going to go 1-1. I just think they have a goal in them. And Thomas Frank's a smart manager. If anybody's teams should learn that they don't have to play against us to get something out of it. If teams come at us, that's when we take care of them. But if teams like Newcastle and Everton come to do one thing, they've proven that they can do that and get something out of it. So I think that could be a trend more and more.
That was my least favorite match this season, apart from the one that's just gone. But Newcastle, I just turned my stomach. It was mm-hmm. quite a technical kind of game, but cancelled one another out. And I didn't like it. It wasn't much enjoyment anyway. Podders, thanks very much for tuning in. It's an Arsenal thing for @gmail.com. If you've got anything to say on what we've said this evening or anything you want to chuck at us. Guys, it's been absolutely amazing. You take care of yourselves and I'll see you soon.
Top football folk with animal names. Well, some of them are made up. Well, all of them are. Former Liverpool and Everton manager, Giraffa Benitez. Hey, I like that one. I can hear you groaning already. Chelsea players, John Terrier and Didier Drogba. Former United players, Wayne Kangarooney and Edwin Panda Sarr. That's my favourite. Courtesy of ReadyToGo.net. Now, we heard this football story. It's not about Arsenal, but it is funny. It's regarding Newcastle under the leadership of manager Ozzie Ardiles. Have a listen to this.
We had a training session under Ozzie. It's called shadow play. He picks his 11 that's going to start on the Saturday or through the week. Your goalkeeper are 4-4-2. And you've got a full-size pitch. You're playing against nobody. Get some goals and then come back and start again. So Ozzie has set us up. We've took the kickoff, passed it back to Lee Clark. Lee Clark's passed it back to Kevin Scott. Again, we're playing backwards and we should be going forwards because we ain't playing anybody. Kevin Scott gives it to Steve Watson. Steve Watson turns round and passes it back to Tommy Wright, who's in goal. Tommy Wright was putting his gloves on in the back of the net. The ball goes in the goal. We're getting beat 1-0. We ain't playing any football. And we were going through a really bad time at the time, and you could just see Ozzy just rocking with his hand. He's in his hands and he's going, fucking hell, boys, we're shit, man. We're getting beat 1-0 and we ain't playing anybody. That's how bad it was.
My thanks to Silent Dave. You can find him on Twitter as SilentDave101. That's also the home of Jay, who you can look up as the Ball Gooner. Paul is at PMATCAP, Lauren is at LaurenD2710, and Tom is ThomasAnastasi3. The podcast is on most social media outlets, including Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok. Shout-outs to Brandon Murphy, Dave Miller of Arsenal Attic, Simon Deasy of Gunners for Life, which is twin to the podcast. And while you're there, check out Arse Devils for the latest news and opinion on Arsenal. Please like and follow this audio version of the podcast and subscribe to the YouTube version of the show. Want to say hi, ask a question, or take part in the show? It's an Arsenal thing for @gmail.com. A big thank you to all of you for your support, whether you watch or listen. Until next time, look after yourselves and each other. And finally, remember this, North London is most definitely red.